Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the round table, this time a rectangle table, where we discuss all of the hottest and coolest and most interesting moments from game night. This week's episode, we're talking about the Midnight Hunt episode, and we're going to have clips from our guests as well to accompany our questions.
Yeah, I should say we're for sure going to have clips from Sholo. Voxy, we've requested clips. We just haven't got them yet as of the time of this recording. So hopefully she'll show up in here as well.
Fingers crossed.
So we're going to talk about all the most commented on moments, questions from the Midnight Hunt episode of Game Nights. But before we get into it, we got to talk about our sponsors. We have a brand new sponsor, channelfireball.com/commands. You know, Channel Fireball just launched their brand new marketplace.
I guess it's
still Midnight Hunt, so yeah, it's still exactly. Okay to there howl about almost anything. This is howl worthy though, I think, because Channel Fireball is doing something interesting where they are vetting all the vendors on their site and making sure they have business licenses and things like that. So when you are using the Channel Fireball marketplace, you're supporting local game stores, but you also know that you're going to get a professional experience when you order your cards, because you're dealing with people who have a real business, not somebody who's just, you know, as a hobby selling cards out of their basement or whatever.
Yeah, it's really important that local game stores are working with Channel Fireball. Oftentimes, the online retailers cut out the stores themselves to do it themselves. So this is actually really important. You know, a lot of LGSs have had a tough time, and this is a great way to support them passively, even without having to be in the same city or state as them.
And then, of course, once you get the cards from the Channel Fireball marketplace, you want to keep them in really good condition. And the best way to protect all of your game pieces is by using products from Ultra Pro. You know, they have the best card sleeves. Yep. We always talk about the Eclipse sleeves, but sometimes we don't mention that. Like, all their sleeves now, even the ones that have, like, the printed backgrounds,
the full art, yeah,
from Midnight Hunt, they'll have werewolves or whatever on them. They use that Eclipse technology for all their sleeves. So all their sleeves are just super high quality, don't break. I've had Eclipse sleeves, like, the same decks and the same Eclipse sleeves for multiple years now. Those things last forever. They really are great at protecting your cards. So nobody makes sleeves like Ultra Pro.
Yeah, and they've been doing it for the longest time. So of course they've got it down pat.
Yeah.
And another quick notice, we have a token Kickstarter happening right now for the Game Nights token series limited edition number 2. The art is awesome. We have all of your favorite tokens and characters from Game Nights history here. And make sure you go to that Kickstarter to back this project, because like all of our other Kickstarters, once it ends, you won't have access to the product anymore.
Yeah, it's limited time only. Beautiful art by Josiah Cameron. And we did something new this time. There are those gold gold-bordered foil versions of the tokens.
They look sweet.
They turned out super, super sweet. So, yeah, definitely check that out. All the links are in the show notes.
Oh, and a special playmat, two-sided playmat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a tier that has a playmat there that's really, really cool. Okay, let's get into the meat of the episode here. So, again, the roundtable episodes, if you haven't seen one before, we discuss... This is a discussion among the players about a Game Nights episode, this one for Midnight Hunt. Our goal here is to sort of address the comments, the questions, the stuff that we hear back from the audience.
Yeah, and if you ever want to see your comment shown on air, the most important thing is to make sure you make that comment within 24 hours of the video coming out. That's when we pull all of the things from there. And typically, there's the comments that are going to be most interesting, or we see the most questions about stuff. So if you want your comment to be seen in these cool episodes, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, you can comment on the YouTube video, on Twitter, even email us. Our Discord is a good place as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're pulling those from everywhere. All right, one last warning here. Spoiler alert. This is a spoiler show. We are going to talk about the episode. So if you have not seen Game Night's Midnight Hunt, you probably want to pause this video, go watch that, and then come back so that we don't ruin anything for you.
Yep, yep, yep. And also, we're going to bring up a lot of questions and things that people have commented on. We're not calling you out for making these questions or comments. We're not calling you dumb. In fact, a lot of the times, if we see somebody ask the same question like 15 times, that's kind of on us almost, because clearly something wasn't communicated enough. So it's an interesting way to look at stuff, and don't feel called out if you see your comment on the screen either.
All right, let's talk about really quickly here. So Sholo and Voxy were the two guests. Again, we definitely have clips from Sholo that he sent us answering a bunch of these questions. Voxy, we requested the clips, and we're hoping that we get them from her, but we haven't yet. So I think a lot of people know Voxy plays Magic. It's not a surprise.
She's because, a streamer.
Yeah,
she does all the time.
Magic all the time.
I started playing Magic in 2014, Concept Tarkir block. Very lightly, only really doing pre-releases and limited. I didn't really start taking Magic seriously until I started streaming it in October of 2018. And yeah, I've been doing it full time for 3 years now.
Sholo, there were some, a number of people that were surprised and wanted to know a brief history of how he got into Magic. So we'll let him talk about that.
I got into the game like anyone else got into the game. It was by force. Shout out to my dog, Jacob Scott Thomas Bertrand. He was like, trust man, just run a couple games with me. And then, later down the line, we ended up living together. And the first couple months consisted of him whooping my butt. On Commander, he had
I still whoop your butt.
Yeah, he still whoops my butt. Because I was like, all right, I'll start. I'll buy a pre-con. And he was like, Ur-Dragon. Ur-Dragon against my freaking, what was my, a Kadena Slinking Sorcerer. That was my first deck.
Yeah, you guys said that was like the only deck I had.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, my win con was Ixodron. Like,
wow, that's no surprise. I actually knew that part of the story, that Sholo had his butt whooped by Jacob many, many times over, which makes sense. Jacob brought a very powerful deck to the table when he played on game nights.
Yeah, I was going to see Jacob make an appearance there in the video really quick. Jacob Bertrand from the Kaldheim episode of Game Nights, who's also a co-star on Cobra Kai with Sholo.
Yeah, so that's why they're hanging out, obviously, all the time. And that's so great, actually, on set and when you're filming stuff, there's so much downtime that having something like Magic is actually an incredible boon, because sometimes we just sit there and have 2 hours free, and sure, yep, everyone could just sit there and look at their phones and do whatever, but that's not as fun as interacting with your fellow castmates.
And from Jacob and Sholo, we've heard that there are a number of castmates on Cobra Kai that do play, so maybe we'll get to see some of those in future episodes of Game Nights.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Okay, let's talk about the next topic here, which is sort of why everyone chose the commanders that they chose. The way we explain this every time, but I'll explain it again. The way we do this is we send out all the possible legendary creatures to the two guests, and we say, you choose first, and whatever you choose, you start building a deck around it, and then Jimmy and I will choose after.
Yeah.
So they kind of get first dibs, because Jimmy and I have been on 50 episodes of the show. We don't need, let's let the guests pick the commanders that they're most excited about. But we don't dictate what they should play, right? We want them to build around a commander that they're excited to build, so we don't want to say, hey, you have to build this one specifically. Mm-hmm. I guess we can start with you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
You played Ludovic in this episode. What made you gravitate towards that as the commander you want to build?
So I typically like to do decks that are slightly outside of my comfort zone these days. Sometimes I'll just be like the red player. We've seen you do this with Boros and all sorts of things. So when I was looking through the list, Tovalar was taken by Sholo. I was thinking about that, but obviously, I think he was
somebody
all
was going to have to play the werewolf commander. So if nobody chose it, I was going to choose it too.
Oh,
like,
nice,
it was like,
nice.
It felt like somebody had to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love when the guests are excited and they type in like all caps with exclamation points.
Yeah.
Like, I got to have this one. So that was awesome to see. So Ludovic, for me, I really liked the idea of reanimation, but not like a busted, super powerful version of it. Like, Mimeoplasm is a deck that I've always wanted to build, but it's not that interesting to me for several reasons. So I like Ludovic. It was slightly powered down, but you could do some more interesting mechanics with it. And I really wanted to kill someone with Phage the Untouchable was my goal. Unfortunately, that did not come to pass. But
would have been cool.
Would have been very cool, yeah. The I think for me, like, blue and black, I played this as well, this color combination with in the Commander Legends.
Yep.
With, what's his name?
Tevizhat,
yeah. And I love that deck, and I thought there was so much fun value to be had, and especially ways to ramp in blue and black that I didn't understand or see before, so I thought it would be a fun way to sort of dive into that world of things.
Okay, well,
why did you choose Florian?
Yeah, I chose Florian, and I think people who have watched, I think, our set review of the monocolored commanders know that I had originally, I was playing around with Gisa.
Right.
And I was thinking about building that deck. But as I started to build it, I realized it wasn't going to be very fun in that it would just like continuously kill all the creatures.
Steal them and then beat people.
It was mostly just like edict effect duck deck. And I just thought that, you know, we knew Cholo was going to play the werewolf deck and Voxie was going to play humans. And it was just going to be a real slog of a game if I did that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't want to play a deck that was like kind of built to beat their decks, especially since it doesn't seem fair when they pick their decks first and then it would,
and they're all creature based decks
too. Yeah, I don't want to build a deck that's just like, I know what you're playing and so I'm going to play this, like that wouldn't be fair at all. So I didn't want to be shutting down their decks.
Less
so
about fair, more about fun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's just like a normal commander pod. It's kind of a rule zero conversation in a way if you think about it, where like we let the guests pick what they're going to do and then Jimmy and I kind of try and meet them on their level, and we definitely don't want a game where it's just super one sided or we have silver bullets against their deck and things like that, right? We're thinking of the audience. Silver bullets. Yeah, I didn't think about it. You know, when we're thinking about the audience too, we want the game to be
dynamic, fun, interactive.
Or whatever, not feel super one-sided. And so, you know, but we want to build a deck that once we're sitting down at the table, we can play it to its full potential and try to win from there. But I don't want to build my deck to just beat them. I want to play my deck to beat them.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
Okay, so then I was sort of tooling around trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was looking at Florian and I got the idea to do Dragon's Approach. Just because Dragon's Approach was a card I obviously eyed because of my Shadowborn Apostles history.
Came out in Strixhaven 2, so it's pretty recent in everyone's memory.
Yeah, so and I figured, oh, okay, so I can do something interesting here. Florian does interact well with the card. And really, so really, Florian just kind of allowed me to do a thing that I had been sort of playing with in my mind, the idea of doing at some point. And so really, I didn't choose a lot based on Florian specifically. It was more like, oh, this will allow me to do sort of an off the path, you know, off the beaten path thing. And so I figured
at some point, a Thrumming Stone will be played on game night. Yeah. This was not the episode yet, but we'll, I mean,
that would have immediately ended the game probably, but you know,
yeah.
Some people mentioned that was like, you had Thrumming Stone there, which immediately ends the game. And I didn't really think about it in those terms.
It's different than like just pooping out a bunch of Shadowborn Apostles. Yeah, this one just hits every Dragon's Approach in your deck.
And it just casts them and casts them and casts them. And Shadowborn Apostles, you have to do other stuff to make that win. But if you just cast 10 Dragon's Approaches, you'll probably win. I didn't really think about that one putting the deck together. So it probably wasn't... It's a good thing I didn't draw the Thrumming Stone. That isn't how we generally like to end games on game nights. Yeah.
Okay.
But
let's hear from the guests.
Yeah, let's hear from the guests about why they chose their commanders.
So the reason I chose Sigarda as my commander was because I've always ever taken apart pre-con decks or had help when it came to constructing commander decks. This was the first time I had ever constructed a commander deck fully on my own, and Sigarda just kind of seemed like, I guess, my speed of commander deck. Plus, she had the new ability Coven, which I really wanted to try out, so it was kind of a no-brainer why I picked her.
It had to be werewolves. There was no other option. I remember Josh sent the list of the commanders, and being that werewolves and wolves in general don't have a great commander, I think it just kind of seemed like the obvious answer. I love playing Gruul, so that was another plus. And yeah, I'd say that's why I chose it. Pretty simple.
He's right. There haven't been like the great werewolf commanders yet, and so I think Tovalar is definitely the best that we've had in a long time. It's obviously very good in commander because you're just drawing tons of cards too.
Yeah, it definitely makes werewolf decks viable, whereas Ulrich did not. Yeah. So I think it's cool because, like you said, Cholo just immediately responded to the email like, I'll play a Silvalar.
Gotta be werewolves, yeah.
And he's right. The art on it is really, really sweet. So, like I said, I think it was important that one of the decks was the werewolf deck. So somebody was going to play that deck. Cholo just happened to be the one that did it, and he grabbed it and ran with it.
Yep.
And it was pretty scary there in that game early on.
Yeah, you're telling me, Josh. I don't want to talk about it. Okay, but let us discuss some of our thoughts on this newest set. Now, obviously, we have Midnight Hunt coming out in Crimson Vow literally almost right after it. This is one of everyone's favorite planes of all time. Definitely one of the most favored, and werewolves were a huge part of it. But there were also a lot of really interesting things in it, adding to Commander. We've done all the set reviews now. Do we have any thoughts on how Midnight Hunt has sort of impacted Commander and then what we think about the set overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing we can do is we can ask our guests here and see what they think about the set.
I think there's already so many, are you going to pay two for that? Are you going to, pay one for Rissic Study? Oh, this, and that. Like, I think there's already so many interactions that happen naturally throughout the game that having another kind of thing on top of that makes it a little bit confusing, especially because Daybound, Nightbound doesn't always necessarily correlate with, like, the older Innistrad cards that say, like, they follow the day-night cycle, transform this, this, and that. Maybe I'm just pea brain and I don't understand it, and that's why it kind of bothers me. But other than that, the good things that I think about the set, well, A, I really want to build my Tovalar deck that I made on the episode. But also, I want to make the Lind curse deck. That's the next deck that I really want to make. That one seems super cool. And I think there's some cool, the mono black one is a little busted, that, or not a little, a little feels bad. The board wipe tribal, for all intents and purposes, that one is a little much, but I like it. I like that I can play werewolves now. I enjoy that. Day-night cycle is not my favorite, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear Sholo talk about day-night and the change from, you know, how werewolves used to work to how they currently work.
Yep.
That's kind of a... And the werewolf, the fact that there's a werewolf deck now, and it, I think it is on EDHREC the most popular commander from this set, so we're probably going to see werewolf decks around for at least the near future.
And you have to pull from werewolves from the past and the current set in order to really build the full deck, too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can have this conversation a little bit here, Jimmy, because we haven't really been able to on the podcast. Well, like, what do you feel about the day-night cycle, and then the fact that it's different than how werewolves worked in the past? Like, what's your feelings on that?
So, Magic's always trying to design as much as they can, and they have a limited amount of things that they can completely... So, like, the idea of Magic and the quandary of Magic... Quandrum? Well, the big thing about Magic is how much can they keep doing until they run out of things to design for.
Right.
So I think day-night cycle is them going, cool, we had this thing in the past, let's add on to it and make it a new sort of refreshed way of looking at it. And it works great for limited, it works great for standard and historic probably, but it definitely does add, like Sholo said, just another layer of things to keep track of. And imagine if you miss the day-night cycle like twice, and the turn goes back twice, and you're like, oh, wait, hold on, oh no.
Yeah,
I think I didn't cast a spell, and did you cast two or one? And then you're into these just like really headache moments, because it's hard to rewind stuff like that. And cards, you know, as someone that double sleeves cards, I hate pulling them out of the sleeve, flipping them around, re-sleeving them, putting them back again. So there is a lot of added complexity. That being said, I think it is really flavorful and kind of cool.
I actually think the day-night cycle is a little less complicated than the old way of doing it, because one of the key things about how day-night works is, like, you can only affect day-night on your turn, your opponents cannot.
Right.
Whereas the old way, you could try and not cast a spell on your turn, and then your opponent casts a spell on your end step, so that a spell has been cast during your turn, and now you don't even get to control flipping them
right
over. Now, of course, on their turn, they get to cast two spells and flip it back, but you can't affect... Uh-oh. It's not like all players on all turns can affect day-night, which I think was designed kind of for Commander, like a way... Because they know about Commander now is like a huge format, they're designing for it more, whereas original werewolves were not.
Yeah.
I do sort of agree though that that's still a lot of accounting that has to occur, but hopefully the werewolf player is the one keeping track, because they
yeah,
like, it should be in the forefront of their mind, like, is it day or night? I'm the one with the werewolves, I need to pay attention.
You're
to
right
that.
The onus is on, if you're the werewolf player, you should be tracking day night and keeping conscious of it, because it does affect your board almost entirely.
Right. It won't affect Jimmy whether it's day or night if he's not playing a werewolf deck or something that cares about it, so
yeah,
for him to track it is not that important to him and not something he's used to doing. So yeah, I think that's an interesting thing. I do think it's complex. What do you think about, there's been a lot of discussion regarding the old werewolves and the fact that they don't have day-night cycle, and a lot of people are calling for them to be erratic.
So
they work the same way. Because right now, if I have Tovalar and I make it nighttime, if I play an old werewolf, it doesn't come in on its night side.
Right.
You know, so now we could get into really confusing where it's day-night, but the old
this
werewolves...
This one doesn't transform, yeah.
Yeah, what do you
it
think about that?
It is definitely a bit of a headache. I think, you know, I don't like the slippery slope argument, but there are a lot of mechanics that come out today that would kind of affect older things. We've seen them do that with, like, oh, are hounds dogs? Are dogs hounds? And right, so they've done some
sort
of...
I think all dwarves are barbarians or something.
Yeah.
Weird, like, official. I don't know.
But all are, but it's a different question to be like, are all old werewolves day-night bound new werewolves? So I think it has to stay separate, because that's a lot of text being changed, and that's a lot of things that are being affected, I think, by that.
Yeah, that's a lot of cards that suddenly don't play how they read.
Yeah, and I think some old cards, too, have different, like, flip conditions or ways to flip, so then you're just getting into this whole messy area. And we already saw tons, and we'll talk about this later, tons of questions about a specific card that kept cards flipped over and people being confused about that already. So I think adding extra confusion is definitely not where we should be going towards Commander.
Yeah, It's interesting though. They have sort of said, well, maybe we'll think about eradicating it.
So. I could see it going both ways. Yeah. It just is, again, maybe it's incumbent on the werewolf player to always be like, okay, everyone, so before we go, here's a one-page explainer of how things work with Day-Night Cycle and old cards that have now been eroded. Everyone's like, okay, cool. Didn't sign
I'm
up for this.
I'm not going to read that, by the way. Yeah, TLDR.
How about you just tell me what it is and I'll trust you.
All right. But Midnight Hunt, I think, is pretty cool. Has added some cool legendary creatures for us.
Yep.
I don't think besides the werewolf thing, it's going to have like any larger effect on Commander than most sets do or anything like that.
I'm glad that Linda exists. Curse deck.
That's cool. Yeah.
And I am very glad that, again, we are keeping to the theme of not making just so many busted cards in standard sets. Because if we're releasing more sets, let's just make sure that we're, you know, keeping the water lukewarm and not scalding hot.
Yeah, there's nothing, I don't think, in any of our reviews from the set that's like gonna like be a tier one deck or anything like that. So yeah. I think that's good.
Like maybe the mono blue counter spells.
Oh yeah, the flashback one.
Yeah, okay, that's the closest. But it's mono blue. If you wanted to do degenerate things in that mono color, blue, yeah, you got plenty of options.
You can Thoracle all you want.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's go to the rules questions from the episode, and there were a number of them, and a lot of them were me. So.
How's it feel, Josh? Mike to the face? Yeah.
Okay. So some of them were actual mistakes and some weren't. Let's start with kind of the biggest one. Which
isn't an actual mistake.
It is
in
a
way.
Mistake, but it's not technically breaking the rules.
There you go. Okay, cool.
So
I feel like what an interesting category to be in. All right. So Josh's commander, it was doing some cool busted stuff with it, flipping over so many cards. And everyone was so impressed at the table that we failed to read the actual text of the card a couple more times to understand that what Josh was doing was actually not advisable.
Yeah. It wasn't breaking rules. It was just suboptimal. So let me read my commander.
Sub is a generous word for that.
I mean, it's not. Okay. Florian, Voldaren, Scion, 1BR for a 3/3 legendary vampire noble has first strike. It says, at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the total amount of life your opponents lost this turn. Exile one of those cards, put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. You may play the exiled card this turn.
Cool.
I'm sure we have a clip from the game that we can play here that kind of demonstrates me doing this. So let's play the clip. All right, on my post-combat main phase, because my opponents have taken 3 total damage, I'm going to exile the top 3 cards of my library. 1, 2, 3.
So cool, you flipped so many cards over.
Yeah, I showed a bunch of cards, and then I chose one, and then I get to play that
card.
You
did the thing, nice.
Yeah, here's what a lot of people noticed, and they're 100% right. Nowhere on Florian does it say that I have to reveal all the cards that are exiled. I have to reveal the one that I choose, right? Because you exile it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you look at the top X cards of your library. When you look at, you do not have to show.
Yeah.
Now, when I exile one of those cards, it is, unless it says exile face down, unless it specifically says that, yeah, then you are exiling face up. So people should know the card that I've chosen, but not all the cards that I looked at. I was just flipping over all of them being like, look what I could choose from, everybody.
Yeah, it was almost like you wanted us to help you choose. Actually, you didn't. And the reason...
It gives away information about my deck. It's definitely suboptimal, right?
Yeah, the reason that you don't need to reveal a lot of the cases is if you're tutoring for something and they ask you to grab a specific type of card, then yes, you have to reveal it.
Because you have to prove, hey, this is an instant or sorcery, yeah, or whatever, yeah.
But in this case, you're not cheating if you just put the cards down. So that's why cards like this typically will not need you to reveal them.
So you don't have to give away the information. And it really did give away information because on the first time I did it, I believe you saw Dragon's Approach.
Everyone was like, oh.
Because nobody plays just one Dragon's Approach in their deck. That would be weird.
That would be very strange.
On the other hand, so I did think it said revealed when we played it. Obviously, we're playing these cards like before... We're playing them months ago before anybody even knows that they exist. But also, I think that it wasn't the worst thing for the audience to be able to see what I had to choose between. But obviously, it does open me up to people being like, well, why didn't you choose this card or do that? And things like...
That's not a great place to be either.
Yeah, exactly. Technically, though, that is information that I know, and I can give that to my opponents if I want to. Like, if you know the cards in your hand and you want to show your hand to them, you can.
Same thing goes if you, like, Thoughtseize another player in the Commander game. You can just tell people what the cards are or show them, you know.
Yep, exactly. You can give the information you have away. It's smarter generally to keep information hidden from your opponents because they are your opponents, but you are allowed to give the information that you have away if you want to. So anyways, definitely suboptimal by me, but I don't think it affected the game in any large way.
No, I don't think so either. And there was no point when I was like trying to sit there analyzing the cards you were flipping over either. I think everyone was kind of focused on what they were doing.
Well, as soon as you see the Dragon's Approach, you're like, I know what that deck's doing. I don't need to like... I don't need to like evaluate every single card of the deck to be like, what's his strategy?
I guess it's more like, oh, he flipped over Pearl Thumbing Stone. Hope he doesn't have a demonic tutor in there, because if he gets it back, that could be something later on. But the game didn't even get to that point. So,
but I will say to Florian players out there, if you do not have a good reason, don't reveal the cards. You don't have to.
Yeah.
So sorry for being a bad example in that case. Okay, so the next one is also me, the next rules question, but this one is not a mistake. People notice at some point, sort of near the second half, the beginning of the second half of the game, I cast a sign in blood, but I tap a mountain as part of the cost for that, and sign in blood casts black. In fact, we can show that moment here real quick.
I'm going to start by tapping two, and I'm going to play sign in blood.
Nice.
So target player will be me, and I will draw two and lose two, which is pretty painful when you're at 10, but you got to do it.
Uh-oh. Josh making some cheaty McCheat cheats.
Cheaty McCheat cheats. What gives? Why could I tap a mountain as to pay for part of the cost of sign and blood?
Bing. What is Urborg?
Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, is on the battlefield at this time, so I'm allowed to tap my mountain as a swamp and create black mana. Now, this is not something that in the game we actually highlighted. So when I play Urborg, it doesn't like fly up.
Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it.
We don't talk about it. Yeah. We don't point this out to the audience because it doesn't really have a large effect on the game. So we decided just in game nights, often we're just trying to take out as much complexity that doesn't matter.
Right.
Because the game nights and commander games are hard to follow anyway. So part of our job is strip away the stuff that's going to, be distracting, take away focus. I call them just dead ends to nowhere. It's like, hey, we're going to spend a lot of time on this thing.
Yeah.
And we're basically wasting people's time because it doesn't really end up mattering in any way. So maybe we were wrong here because Urborg kind of mattered in this moment.
Yeah, it's tough because there are a lot of different people watching the episode, and I assume that 99% of the people watching it will literally never see that and think, wait a minute, he tapped, I know what Sign and Blood costs, and he didn't tap the right mana for it. But there are people that are also watching us tap our lands every single time, and those are the people also, I think, more apt to comment on it. So it's an interesting conundrum for sure.
One thing you'll notice about Game Nights, if you watch it, is like the first few turns, we show the lands being played, and then eventually we get to the point where it's just not that interesting to see people play lands. So we won't actually often show the land drop for turn. Yeah. It's kind of our philosophy that that's not a super exciting part of the game. You kind of, on some level, hopefully you just trust us that we're not playing extra lands per turn. We are playing our lands per turn most times.
Yeah, and assume that the person's going to play that land, because there have been comments being like, wait, Jimmy exiled that card, but he didn't play the land off it. What gives there too? And it's like, well, he did. We just didn't show it.
Yeah, exactly. And so also in general, the people that are trying to catch us as we made a mistake or whatever. And I realize that's fun for some people and that's totally fine. But we're not designing the show for them.
Yeah.
So I think, I think we'll still choose to skip over what we consider to be small or unimportant things that might take a long time to explain because the shows are already long and they're already complex.
I will say that we've had a few times where our Urborg's been out and people are like, why are you doing that? You can't tap that for that mana. So maybe at the table, every time someone plays Urborg, they just need to go, Urborg, everything taps for swamps. And you can just cut that in somewhere.
I'd say also, if you're watching, in general, you should probably just trust us that we're paying the correct mana for stuff. That's not a fun part of the game to explain every time.
Yeah.
Right? Every time we play a card, we don't want to be see, I could play that because I have a mountain and do other lands, you know what I mean? That's just not something that's going to be exciting for most people if we go into it deep every time.
Yep. And Urborg is a little confusing, but now that we also have the green version of it too, so maybe it is something that I'll keep it in mind. At the table, I'll announce it. And if it makes it into the edit, then congrats.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. This is something, Jimmy, that you alluded to earlier. So do you want to explain the Immerwolf Day-Night Conundrum?
I'll bring up the card as well. So Immerwolf is an older card, and it's one that makes a massive difference in this game because it, I think, is kind of what kills me ultimately at the end of it.
Well, not for the reasons that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
So there are a lot of people confused about the card Immerwolf, so we'll read it first. It's one red and a green for a 2/2 creature wolf with intimidate. Other wolf and werewolf creatures get +1/+1. And non-human werewolves you control can't transform.
Yeah, so Immerwolf is designed for the old werewolves, and that's why it says non-human werewolves can't transform. So it's meant to lock them on the werewolf side, not the human side. So Immerwolf would allow the human werewolves to transform, so you could always flip over to what is usually the better side, right? The werewolf side.
The stronger side.
Yeah, is usually the stronger side. But people were saying they were confused because the day-night cycle works differently, and there is a rule that, like, cards that say, hey, transform this card or transform all your cards do not work on the day-night cards.
Yep.
Because they would transform them, and then they would say, but it's night, it's daytime, and then just immediately go back. So Moon Mist is kind of the go-to card we've been using as an example. Transforms all your stuff, but it wouldn't work on the day-night cards. However, Immerwolf does work with the day-night cards in that stopping something from transforming is not the same thing as causing something to transform.
So should we go back and errata all this stuff now with all these extra confusions?
Yeah. I don't know.
This is what makes it really tough.
It's definitely a corner case because Immerwolf's kind of the only card that does this. That,
yeah.
But what it would do is Immerwolf's holding it on whatever side, on the werewolf side, on the night side. And then if somebody killed the Immerwolf, then the stuff would immediately flip over if it was daytime.
Yeah.
Because kind of constantly checking, is it day or night, day or night?
Yeah, yeah. State-based or something.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, and I understand why people did not
get it.
Yeah, didn't know that. We had literally checked this with Wizards before we played the game because we were like, okay, how does day-night work? And we learned the ins and outs and managed to get most of it right, surprisingly. But that was one where I was like, really? That works? And they were like, yep. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Okay. What I find the funniest about the whole Immerwolf thing is like, The controlling of the flipping didn't matter much because he had Tovalar.
Yep.
So he could already choose day night on his turn.
Yeah, on upkeep, it'll turn to night.
The most important part of Immerwolf in that game was that it had Intimidate.
Yeah, unfortunate that none of my cards shared any colors. I had no artifact creatures at times.
Yeah, I wouldn't have seen that coming when he first played the card. I would have said, oh, the transforming
thing. The transform is pretty cool.
Or
yeah.
The anthem effect.
The lore effect's pretty good too.
But no.
Yeah, thanks, Immerwolf. That I will have nightmares about that card.
Thanks, Immerwolf. I will have dreams.
Happy dreams
about the card. Yeah, I don't know what the opposite of nightmare is.
I hope they transform daydreams into nightmares, though. Okay.
Okay. The next potential, I don't know if this is a rules mistake, but this is a sort of decision mistake some people pointed out potentially.
Yeah.
I'm calling this Tyrants Too Familiar. So there's a point in the game where I, through Dragon's Approach, am able to cheat out a Tyrants Familiar. And
a big flyer.
It's a flyer with haste.
Oh.
And at the time I play it, Sholo has no flyers, and he's at 4 life. You want to read Tyrant's Familiar?
Yep. 5 red for a creature dragon. 5/5 flying haste with lieutenant. As long as you control your commander, Tyrant's Familiar gets +2/+2 and has whenever this creature attacks, it deals 7 damage to target creature defending player's controls. So it breathes fires, it flies in, there's a 5/5 flyer haste that turns into a 7/7. Could definitely have killed Sholo.
Yeah, and even if he had a flying blocker, probably could have removed it on attack, right? So
yeah, because it deals 7 damage to it, and then it keeps attacking.
So people are like, Josh, why didn't you attack and KO Sholo?
KO!
Yeah, here's the thing. Florian triggers on your post-combat main phase. So earlier in that turn, I had to go to my combat phase, do nothing, just to draw quote-unquote draw, the impulsive draw, the cards off Florian so that I could keep going on that turn. And so I did not have a combat phase left. I had already used it. Easy Bummer. To forget, though, because I went to combat, and then I think I cast, like, 5 or 6 Dragon's Approach between... I was doing the Horn of Whatever and, like, flipping cards. So it'd been a decent amount of time since I went to combat.
Yeah, spinning wheels on turns often leads me to forget that I've done combat already or I'm already past it. Oh, you're actually in your second main phase. So this is something that I think, just because of the length of the turn, just got a little confusing.
Yep, I understand why people missed it.
But yeah, why didn't you take him out?
Maybe we should have said something in a moment like, oh boy, I wish I could attack with it, but I already used my combat phase.
True.
All right, this next one is a mistake I made and potentially could have made a little bit of a difference in the game.
Yes, this is the one where I think I was looking at it. All the other stuff, it's like, yeah, inconsequential. This one's like, maybe it would have made a difference, but also maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, we're calling it the Meat Hook Mistake.
My favorite card from the set is Meat Hook Massacre. And Josh,
It's so expensive now, by the way.
Yeah.
When we recorded our set review, I was like, I need 10 of these. Because when we recorded our set review, this card wasn't $50 yet.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I have 2 of them, and that's about as many as I'm going to have.
So because, good job, me.
Yeah.
This card is interesting because it has a lot of text on it, and it's different than the other Aristocrats in the past because it has 2 separate triggers. Basically, it is a board wipe for X black black. It gives each creature -X -X, but it's an enchantment. So after it enters the battlefield, it does that, and then it says whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent loses a life, and whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you gain 1 life. So 2 separate triggers based on creatures your creatures dying or the creatures your opponent's control dying.
Yeah, so when I cast it, I gain a couple of life, and I go to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, Sholo, he actually casts a decimate, and as part of that decimate, he destroys Voxy's enduring angel. In fact, we have a clip here. Let's play that clip.
I will tap two, a mountain and a forest for decimate. I will target enduring angel, shadow spear, the meat hook massacre, and bountiful promenade.
Come on.
So here's the thing. When that enduring angel died.
Not so enduring anymore.
That is an opponent's creature dying, and I should have gained one life.
Going from 7 to 8.
Now, why does that matter? Because it's only one life. Well, let's look at the attack that ends up knocking me out of the game here.
Josh, I'm moving to combat, and I'm swinging all but one at you.
All right. I think I'm just dead here no matter how I block, aren't I?
So you might as well just block nothing, right?
I'm still going to block two things. I'll block the two biggest things, perfect. One with my 3-3 and one with my 5-5.
All right. And you'll take 7.
And I will go to 0.
Yeah, so Sholo attacks for exactly 7. And I think he could have attacked for more. He had some creatures left. He was leaving a little bit back for blockers or whatever. He's mostly trying to draw cards so that he can maybe find an answer to Voxy.
Who is definitely the biggest threat at
and
the
is going to win on the next turn.
Yeah.
Unless he drew a board wipe there. So I think ultimately, does it not matter? I'm not sure.
Could have been a moment where you guys teamed up against Voxy because you knew she was going to win. Who knows?
He had to kill me because I had lethal flyers to him too.
It could be one of those like wink, wink, handshake, kingmaker type moments where it's like, fine, I'll take second, but I'm not going to take third or whatever.
Right. And it is my mistake in that it's my card and I need to be able to, I need to track that trigger, which I just... Like you said, I was concentrating on the lose one life because that's the top part of the text. There's a lot of text on the card. It doesn't work the way as all aristocrats cards work. So I just, you're in the moment. You don't think of another person's creature dying. I was just like, yay, Enduring Angel's dead. Oh, no, I'm dead.
Yeah. There's a lot of text on Meat Hook Massacre, separate triggers. So don't blame me there. It's a tough card.
I don't think it ultimately mattered a lot. I think we were probably just dead on Voxy's turn no matter what, right?
Yeah,
even if I was still alive, she kills him, kills me, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And she has the ability to.
Yep. All right, we've got a whole bunch more stuff to talk about, including Vote Free!
We're going to talk about
the infamous Silvala Stampede, the Prisoner's Dilemma moment. A lot of people were talking about that.
That's the coolest.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to discuss here, but we're going to take a quick break first and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Okay, we are back on the round table talking about the Midnight Hunt Game Nights episode. Again, if you haven't seen the episode, you're just getting all of it spoiled, so that's a choice. Speaking of choices...
Some people like that, that's fine.
Yeah,
as long as you also still watch the episode.
I heard a theory that actually knowing how a movie ends has you have a heightened viewing experience, because the anticipation of the events is actually something that can actually heighten what you're doing.
Okay. So I do not, I don't agree with that theory, but hey, everybody's different, so you never know.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of choices, well, let's talk about the next topic, which is very funnily titled Voting Rights and Wrongs. Huh, that's like a double pun. So
Thank you.
I steal a card called Selvala Stampede off of Sholo's deck at a certain point.
And this is right after, did I wheel?
You wheeled, yeah. So you wheeled and then I cast this. Yeah. And the original hand I had was not good had you all voted for free.
Let's read Selvala's Stampede here real quick just so we can give a lead up. I forget the card that you had. It was Siphon Insight, I think.
Siphon Insight.
And you did it on Sholo and you hide a card away from his deck that we can't see and then you get to cast it later.
Yeah, it's six mana, so I couldn't cast it the turn that I hid it away, so I had to wait a little bit. And fortunately, I did because Josh wheeled and then I got to play Selvala's Stampede, which is a sorcery that says Council's Dilemma. Starting with you, the active player who casts it, each player votes for wild or free. So if you vote for wild, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card for each wild vote. Put those creature cards onto the battlefield, then shuffle the rest of your library. And if you vote free, then you may put a permanent card from your hand onto the battlefield for each free vote. So that includes lands and everything else. So Josh is very adamant in telling everyone, look, don't give him extra cards off the top of his deck. Make him work with what's in his hand. That way that, you know, even though it might be scarier, it doesn't mean that he just gets to see free cards and then also have a hand that he gets to play later on.
This is something we've talked about with this card before. I believe the correct strategy for it, which is like, if you get vote wild and he reveals cards off the top of his deck till he gets a creature for every vote and does that, well, everything he's getting off of his deck is basically the same as drawing the card and also getting it out. Mm-hmm. Now, it's randomized. He doesn't get to choose what it is. But it is card advantage. Whereas if it's just like, hey, put a card from your hand onto the battlefield, that's not, he doesn't gain cards there. He just gets a thing out and he gets to choose.
Yep.
But I actually think the wheel maybe would have made me think that this is even better because it is kind of randomized. Like you got random stuff off the wheel.
Yeah, so I could be holding it in the hand. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. this we've talked about this many times, but in this case, well, I don't have to explain it. We can see how it turned out. I convince everybody, Sholo, Voxy, and myself, to vote free so that he's putting cards from his hand onto the battlefield, and this is what happens.
And then I'm going to tap everything for six mana.
Mm.
And I'm going to cast Sholo's card from exile. And it is... Selvala's Stampede.
Oh, boy.
Come on.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to vote for free.
You're choosing from your hand?
Yes. I'm going to choose...
I think wild is better.
No.
Oh.
I think free is almost always better because he draws the card virtually if he gets it off the top of his library.
I'm not drawing it.
But it's the same as drawing it, right? It gets him an extra card. Yeah. This is a card from his hand. He loses the card from his hand. Right. I am going to vote for free. Another card from his hand.
I, too, will vote for free.
I guess I'll vote for free.
All right. This is good. Sholo and Voxy, they're listening to reason here. They went with the right call. What are the odds he's got four really awesome things in his hand, right?
Josh definitely convinced you guys to make the right choice because the first one's a Consecrated Sphinx. The second one's the Scarab God.
Yep.
The third one's Shieldred. And the fourth one's Mystic Remora.
Oh, God.
How savage.
He had four really awesome things in his hand. Maybe we should have voted for Wild.
Wow.
It might be the best Selvala Stampede that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was astounded when everyone voted free because I was like, oh no, don't do that. Because I just wheeled and my deck is filled with these crazy creature cards I want to copy with my commander. So either I play them from my hand or they're in my graveyard. So both wheeling was great for me on every single angle. I just happened to draw all these cards. I knew what I had hidden away and I was like, this is going to be the best Selvala Stampede I've ever cast.
20 mana worth of stuff right there.
Yeah, and not just that, but like some of the best cards in the history of Magic. Like those are all so powerful.
Okay, well, so after this happens, I guess we can hear from our guests here what they were thinking after it happened, if they blamed me, if they were like, why did I listen to Josh? So let's see what they say.
The Selvala Stampede decision. Looking back, I know it's a lot of fun to poke fun at Josh, but looking back, I believe it was the right decision. No matter what, Jimmy was going to draw those cards anyway. He just happened to have some of the best cards in his hand, forcing him to be one of the biggest threats at the table.
You should vote for free. Here's the only, just to play devil's advocate, and this is truly like the weakest devil's advocate I have, but he's had Selvala Stampede since like way, way early in the game. He would only play Selvala Stampede if he knew that other players would be like, well, we should vote free because da da da, you know what I'm saying? I agree with Josh. we should have voted for, or we like, we should have voted for free, and we did vote for free. It was just an unfortunate circumstance, but it doesn't matter, because I gave you the punishment. I gave you the punishment, Jimmy.
Wow. Well,
it didn't matter because he killed you.
He gave me the punishment, too. That's a brutal way to describe him.
But you know what? He makes a really good point here, yes, and I think correct. I didn't weigh this correctly at the moment, which is like, you know exactly what I'm going to say when you play that card.
Yeah, and why would I cast it if I didn't know it was in my hand?
And you voted free.
Yes, that may have been my mistake, actually. I should have voted wild.
Then make it look like
I wanted wild and been like, my hand is not good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But you voted free, and you also, we've talked about the card on the show, so you know exactly my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
And you know I'm going to tell everybody. And you know that argument is very convincing. So I maybe should have taken that into account when saying like
context clues.
Yeah, saying I honestly still think I would, even knowing what happened, I would still vote free.
Yeah,
because imagine the other position we're in, where you get four random things off the, or three random things and the best card in hand, probably Consecrated Sphinx.
Yeah,
out onto the battlefield, but you still have Shieldred, you still have Scarab God,
and I still have
Mystic Remora in your hand.
Yeah, and the Remora doesn't matter as much because I have the Consecrated Sphinx. Yeah, so I think at least three free votes is where I'm the strongest on this. And, you know, but at the same time,
but like, are we in a better position with three random creatures off the top of your deck plus a Consecrated Sphinx, but you having that stuff in your hand?
Maybe.
I think we're not.
Well, the big question for me is like, do I play Consecrated Sphinx or do I play Shieldred? Because the Shieldred Edict effect is really good, yeah, and my life total is low. The most important thing is I needed blockers. So the fact that I had a flying blocker in the Consecrated Sphinx is why I actually voted for free in the first place. The card draw was going to be good, but I knew that I needed
to get six cards and then block.
Yeah, and something. A great blocker, yeah, yeah. Flying specifically.
But you're going to get three other creatures. I mean, you're guaranteed.
Yes.
Get stuff.
Yeah, and I know my deck is packed with really powerful creatures. Now, if I flipped Phage off of that, I just lose the game immediately.
I didn't even think about that, but
yeah.
We didn't know your deck well enough. I think if I knew Phage was in there, I might have.
Yeah,
like,
and that's another reason why I probably voted free, is because I didn't want to just die.
You want extra cards.
That would be
four creatures deep. It would be hilarious, though. That would be epic. That would
be
like
classic
a
Jimmy.
That would be a classic Game Nights moment immediately if Phage came off the top. Phage makes you lose the game if you don't cast it, by
from
the way.
Your hand, yeah. Yeah. But you can copy it from your graveyard, no problem, with Ludovic. So that's why she's in the deck.
Pretty interesting. I still think, and I would still advise everybody out there, 99% of the time vote free. But Jimmy, do you agree with that?
I think I still do, unless you know their deck list. Because if they're running like an Omniscience, that's the big difference with Savala Stampede, is that from the hand, it's any permanent. So it could be a land or a crazy enchantment, whatever it is. If it's just a creature off the top of your deck, that's a little safer, depending on what the person's deck list is. But they're also probably not casting this card in their deck, unless they're either heavily creature-based or know that they have like a bomb to drop from their hand with the free side.
I don't know. I think you still cast it if you've got like one really good card in your hand that costs more than six. Right?
Yeah, well, you always get
now, and you're going to get like a couple more things.
Yeah, you always get one vote yourself. So there are a lot of combos with a card like this. So
it is definitely a very powerful card, and if you're not playing it in your green decks, I would think about it.
It's
pretty good. All right, let's move on to the next category here, which is Sholo's politics.
Quite a lot of them.
He was very political this game.
You know, so was Jacob, I remember, when he came on. I remember he immediately started deal-making, and I was like, these guys have watched too many episodes of Game Nights.
They're also, like, actors, and they're charismatic guys,
so I'm
sure that works for them a lot, right?
Oh, 100%.
Like, yeah, where they're like, I've got charisma, and people like me, I'm going to use that, and you know what? It totally works. It worked for both of them.
They're used to wheeling-dealing, I'm sure, too, around the table with each other, so they've worked this muscle quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, so let's first talk about, because there's two moments with Sholo's politics that we're going to talk about here. The first is the don't attack deal. So Sholo makes a deal with me and Voxy that he's going to basically KO Jimmy using the Intimidate on the Immerwolf.
Sucks.
And he will do that if we agree not to swing or attack him. In fact, I'm sure we have a clip. Let's play the clip of Sholo making the deal.
All right, Jimmy has his whole deck in his hand. I think we can all agree that Jimmy is the greatest evil here and that he needs to perish. I have to tap out to do this, so I'm asking for full immunity.
So we can't attack you or do anything to you on our turns?
I would appreciate that, yeah.
I have to ask you a question. Am I allowed to cast Dragon's Approaches? Because...
Are you going
to
kill me with the Dragon's Approaches?
Unlikely.
It'll deal damage to her as well, so yeah, you can cast Dragon's.
Okay, I mean, listen, I want to uphold our deal. If you say no, I won't do it.
No. So I technically did say that Josh couldn't swing at me, and that's what the immunity was for. But also, one Dragon's Approach, as long as it doesn't pop off with it, I'm not too worried.
Okay.
Okay, so the deal's been made. Sorry, Jimmy. We agree to it,
Your
though.
Apology means nothing at this point.
It's okay. I wasn't really sorry.
I knew it.
Okay. So then, you know, it goes to Foxy's turn. She follows the deal. She attacks me, doesn't touch Sholo. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to my turn. And I believe I even asked him, like, hey, you said attack or swing. Does that mean I can't do Dragon's Approach? And he was a man of honor. He said, no, you can do Dragon's Approach. I said attack. I think he also wanted me to deal damage to Voxie because she was gaining so much life.
Yeah,
he was thinking like, and he wasn't worried about dying, right? He's just like, do a little damage to both of us, but if you hit her, maybe I can get through that. And
he also didn't realize how many Dragon's Approach you were going to cast in that turn.
And I don't think anybody did because even I didn't realize it. Yeah, so it ends up that I think I cast 9 Dragon's Approach, do 27 damage, bring him down to like 4
crazy,
life.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people being like, you know, Josh broke the deal and he didn't honor it. And well, I guess we can hear it right from the horse's mouth here of what Sholo thought about that deal. Or, sorry, not about the deal, but about the way my turn went after we made the deal.
Josh was like, look, if you truly, like, we made a deal. If you don't want me to Dragon's Approach, I won't Dragon's Approach because I said I wasn't going to swing at, or, like, I said I wasn't going to deal damage to you. But what I had said was, don't swing at me. And I guess, in retrospect, I would have said, don't deal any damage to me. But then it kind of just feels like, I don't know. That felt kind of feels bad to be like, no, you can't do the main thing your deck is supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sholo needs better lawyers.
Because, maybe you can have Jacob represent him.
Yeah. He did word it incorrectly in that he said, he literally said attacks, or maybe I think it was swings, but it was like, I remember in the moment, he didn't say don't deal damage.
Right.
Or don't do
and
anything.
He also knew what your deck was doing at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was nice of him to not turn off what my deck does, but at the same time, like, he could have said, hey, of IKO Jimmy, you can't cast Dragon's Approach. I think in that case, though, I would have done my classic, like, I can't make that deal. If you want to leave Jimmy alive and lose to him, then go for it.
Yeah, yeah. Which would have been great, by the way. Sholo, you do need new lawyers. Excuse me, I could have stayed alive. Actually, I think Voxie would have murdered me, too. But
yeah, and I think he would have been like, fine, I'll still KO Jimmy, because you were too scary with 20 cards in your hand at that point as well.
Yeah, I think more than that for sure. yeah, you know, this is definitely one of those interesting moments, because we always do these sort of like political deals, and we talk about how the language and the words that you use are important.
You need good lawyers.
Yeah, I think Sholo is obviously an incredibly good sport. There were so many moments in the game that were so memorable because of how he played it. So I'm glad that it did end up the way that it did. Also, not going to lie, when you're out of the game, you want things to go fast. So I was like, keep casting them, Josh. Kill everyone, especially Sholo.
Well, I will say that deal got him closer to winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, Voxie's life game was a big deal. Yeah. And that's 100% the most impactful part of the second half of the game.
Yeah, but making that deal, like, I'm going to take out Jimmy, you guys can't, you know, attack me, it actually did work out in his favor in that he was there at the end with a chance to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was maybe a little bit of a long shot, but probably less of a long shot than it was if you were still around and Voxie wasn't as low, right?
Yeah, so, and he actually got the card that may have been the perfect one, but didn't actually close it out the way that we thought he would.
Yeah, so this is kind of the big political moment of the game that everybody was talking about. I would say it's probably one of the most commented on moments. It's the Crater Hoof's Dilemma. A lot of people comparing it to the Prisoner's Dilemma, which is a classic game theory situation. Yeah. So late in the game, Sholo does something I don't think I've ever seen. He plays Crater Hoof Behemoth, pumps his team to a massive amount, and then, well, I don't have to explain it. We have a clip. We can just show what happened in the episode.
Well, I'm going to go for it. I will tap out.
Uh-oh.
For Crater Hoof Behemoth.
Aluga.
So I'm doing the math. It's pretty obvious. He can take out either me or Voxie, but I don't think he can take out both of us.
So I'm in the classic commander position. If I kill Josh, I'm dead on Voxie's turn. But if I kill Voxie, I'm dead on Josh's turn. Peaky Blinders. So
I'm going to make a proposition.
Wow.
Proposing
He's
a
very
proposition,
political in this game.
And I will kill neither of you.
What?
If I get immunity from death on your turn and your turn.
So you're saying they cannot kill you. You must stay alive.
I must stay alive.
When Josh says pass turn the next time, you cannot be dead.
Yeah, and you can't kill things on my board.
So it's full immunity. We can't do anything to you.
full immunity. What's your answer?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say yes too.
Oh, no!
Okay.
So he's in the classic commander position.
Also, Craterhoof very rarely hits the board and doesn't win the game on the spot. So this is a very interesting moment because typically that card means game over for everyone.
Yeah, pumps everything so big. But it just happens to pump it kind of enough that, like, he can take out one of us.
Yeah, and leave himself open on the backswing.
Yeah, he definitely dies to whoever he does not kill, and that's just on board at that moment. It's not like unknown calculations in there, right? Like, he 100% knows.
Yeah, he's played the card. He can't take it back. I remember, too, he was like, oh, gosh, what do I do now?
Yeah. And I honestly, as soon as he plays it, my first thought was, oh, I'm dead.
It's over, yeah.
Yeah, he's killing me for sure. But he finds, like, a third option here that's pretty interesting. Rather than actually swing, he just threatens. He uses it as leverage, and he basically says, hey, you can do the math. I can kill either one of you.
And it's like the guns up. Everyone's playing at each other. But
I got one bullet. It'll take out one of you.
And the moment you start firing, it's over for you.
Yeah. And he says, but if you promise to give me a full immunity this time, his lawyers are doing a better job the second time around, which means you can't do anything to me so that I guarantee get a next turn, then I will swing. I won't swing at the people who agree to that.
Yeah. And they'll just play a 8-mana 5/5 creature, basically.
And it works. Voxy and I both sort of, because it's a tough situation to be in where,
because
if you say no, you're probably dead. Mm-hmm. Voxy maybe could have lived if we both said no.
Yeah, maybe. I think at that point, it really is just a three-player kingmaker situation, which happens quite often in three-player games where one person is like, well, I can do enough to kill one person, but I'm going to die as a result. And so you kingmake one person.
Yeah. So perspective, I had to say yes, because if I say no and she says no, he kills me.
Yeah.
And so if I say yes, she has to say now yes, otherwise he kills her.
Yeah.
So it kind of like, and I thought I was going to live through her turn, which did end up being true.
Nope.
So, yeah, I did live, but then I died on the next turn. So it was like, okay, I'm going to get one more turn here. She can't kill me on board, so I might as well say yes.
The Prisoner's Dilemma with the Craterhoof Behemoth was one of the coolest politicking of a commander game that I had ever seen. I never would have thought to have done that. I would have probably taken one of us out at some point and then just hoped I lived the next turn, but I thought that was absolutely genius of Sholo to do.
So that was pretty interesting. Let's hear what Sholo had to say about it, though, and his whole reasoning behind the thing.
I mean, I'd like to thank the Academy, Harvard, for really giving me this big-brained idea. But, you know, I think it was cool reading the comments because a lot of people were giving me credit, like, oh my gosh, wow, that was cool. You guys don't understand how, like, I wouldn't say it was like a smart play. It was like a last stitch. I was looking at my hand. My hand was garbo. You look at your hand and you think, oh, Craterhoof Behemoth, that's really great. But not when you've just taken damn near 30 life from Josh Lee Kwai's Dragon's Approach, and you're like, well, if I swing into one person, I mean, you guys saw the episode.
Yeah, basically, I mean, I just love the thinking here, which is that, and it was big-brained. I know he played it down a little bit, but
it was very big-brained. I would have been like, I can't win with this card. Let's see something else to do.
Yeah, I don't think I would have played the Craterhoof there. I think I would have tried something else and probably ended up just dying, like auto-dying, and he really did, you know, think orthogonally. And that's one of the great things about Commander, right? It's you're looking at the cards, but then it's easy to forget that you have this other game piece, which is like your negotiating power and being able to leverage that. And didn't end up winning him the game, spoiler alert, but it gave him
a much better chance of doing it. It was like a Hail Mary almost.
I would say like at the beginning of his turn there, you know, he said his hand wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. So if looking at his hand, he's probably like less than, you know, he's probably close to 0% chance to win that game.
Yep.
You know, if he doesn't make this particular move. And this move, it didn't give him a 50% chance to win the game, but it maybe gave him 12% chance or something, which is a big difference from like where he was at less than 1% to win.
And that's something that any Magic pro can respect as well, because that's what they're constantly eyeing for, is those small, tiny advantages and percentages that get them closer to winning.
Yeah, and if you turned all of your, like, I'm 99% chance to win, to lose this game moments into, well, I suddenly have 10% chance to win, then you would win a lot more games
over the
course. Because it's instead of auto-losing, you give yourself a 1 in 10 chance or something. So I really liked that move by Sholo. It was pretty shrewd.
Yeah, good stuff as always. Good job, Sholo. You brought a surprise to this game. And even though I was out of it, I was wrapped right back in by that play.
I gotta say, if we ever get Sholo and Jacob on the same,
I'm killing both of them.
It's gonna
be
a lot
first.
Of politics. There'll be so much talking in that.
I'm not gonna politic a single bit with either of them. I'm going to put cards in my deck that literally murder them. That's what I'm just like,
I don't know if I'll have to review the paperwork constantly in that game. Like, what did we say? What are the wording?
We might get some signatures, some thumbs pricked with blood.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We're going deep.
All right. There was, of course, a lot of really cool card animations in this episode. As always, a lot of love out there in the comments for the animations. We always are very excited to just, you know, keep up in our game, and it's super fun when the audience is noticing and they're calling out specific ones.
Yeah, and the little Easter eggs too, always present.
Yeah, there's a lot of Easter egg sounds and moments and references and things like that. So great work to Sam, Patrick, and we also had Evan and Nick help us out on this one. And in fact, Evan Limburger is joining our staff in a couple of weeks, so we'll be working, you know, full time at the Command Zone, and so that's going to allow us to push our animation, our VFX game up even more. We're really excited about that.
I love that.
Yeah. So before we play the montage of all the animations, though, Jimmy, did you have a favorite one?
Yes, and it's actually not a new one, but it doesn't get played that often. The Wheel of Fortune animation is quite simply one of the most divine things I've ever seen on the channel. It's so great because typically it's like cool monster doing a move and saying a line,
right.
And Wheel of Fortune is just like, what if we don't do that? Let's play to the art style instead. And I think that's awesome because Magic has such diverse, crazy arts that it's fun to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's like a little homage to the Hanna-Barbera,
you
know, cartoon days. And
I'm a big fan. I've been playing a lot of Limited for Midnight Hunt. And the way that they do Daylight and Nightbound on that is like, okay. And the way we do it, I think is awesome. It's just fast. It's quick. It has a cool little effect to it too. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and remember, we don't get to see what they're doing before we do ours, right? We're working on it before the set's out. So,
what about you?
I really liked the Enduring Angel, actually, how it came down, like, boom, landed, and then formed the sword back up to use. I thought that was really clever.
That adds new life to cards, because typically, like, it's like, okay, it's in this position, just get them to that position. I like when it's, like, adding that. It's like a whole story element.
Yeah, exactly, and we don't know for sure if that's the story the card is telling, but based on the visuals we have available in the piece, it's always fun to be like, oh, okay, so what can we have it do?
Right.
What story can we tell? So that was really cool when those were able to pull off. Let's hear from our guests here about what their favorite animations were.
My absolute favorite animation, and I may be a little bit biased, from the show was definitely that Shadow Spear. My jaw freaking dropped when I saw that. Like, are you kidding me? And also, I love them all, but my top two favorites, Shadow Spear and then that Arlen. That Arlen was just chef's kiss, amazing.
The Shadow Spear one was sick. The Arlen Cord one was sick. There was another, Tovalar, when it transformed, I think that was the one where, like, the werewolves were running up the mountain. That one was really cool. I loved the day-night cycle. I mean, there's so many. I mean, shout out to the whole team over at, you know, Game Nights and their, you know, Sam Waldo.
Oh, I forgot about Shadow Spear.
Shadow Spear is
so cool. Now that we have the ability to model things in 3D, you'll notice too with the card previews in the beginning, when we're talking about the set, we're putting them in settings and stuff. Shadow Spear is right in that same world, and it's just so cool to have that happen to a card.
Yeah, it's super, super cool. And I want to say too that we've constantly been working on having the characters speak and really working on the mouths and making them look, and hopefully you notice that they're looking better and better than they ever have. So that's something Sam has particularly been working on pretty hard. And I think, like, Ludovic looks really good when speaking
in
this episode.
Well.
Yeah, and those are the kind of things we're just constantly developing and trying to get better at and improve our techniques. Anyway, without further ado, we should play the montage of a lot of the cool animations from the episode.
Choices, choices, choices.
My bite is worse than my bite.
Hope is not lost. shockingly beautiful.
So cool. Great work to our whole VFX team.
That I want the original artists to see these as well, and I want to hear what they think about it, because it's taking their art and bringing it to life in a whole new way. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we would be remiss if we had any episode go by without giving huge props to the awesome editing team, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, and Manson Lung. They really, really always kill it, but this one had a pretty quick turnaround time too, I gotta say.
Yeah, that's true.
It was hot on the heels of the last episode, which was the AFC stuff, and they had to get it done pretty fast. And you know, those guys are such pros that you can't even tell that they had less time on this one than usual. It just looks as good as any episode, which is really a testament to, you know, the amount of talent and the amount of time and hard work those guys put in.
If we had more time, maybe they could have covered up every single card you revealed, you know.
You know, there was some discussion. Murph was like, I think I could fix it so you don't reveal it. And the way that we would have to do it would have taken a long time. And I was like, you know what? I made the mistake. I think it's still fine for the viewer if we see it.
Yeah,
but honestly, we did have that talk real quick, because I think with some editing tricks, we could have decided
sort of
not
to. Obfuscated it, right.
Done
maybe,
it off camera.
Maybe you still see it, but it's more that about the reveal. And
Anyway, so yeah. Awesome job by our whole post-production team. They really do always kill it. Okay, we're going to wrap up here, but before we go, we want to hear some final thoughts, closing thoughts from our guests.
My closing thoughts on that entire episode was that had to have been hands down one of the best Commander games that I have ever played. I feel like everybody's deck got to do its own thing. I feel like everybody kind of popped off. There was politicking. There was deals being made. We got to see cards from the new set. Like, that was, it was like a 4.5 hour game. It was just like the perfect amount of Commander with like the perfect type of people. 10 out of 10 would do again.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a freaking blast. I love Magic. I'd love to come back. I'd love to come back with Jacob. That'd be super cool.
Cheers to both of our guests. I do hope we get to have that Cobra Kai reunion. That'd be pretty fun.
I gotta bring my politics game though, man. Those guys.
I'm just bringing my CEDH deck, as we've talked about.
Don't say that, because then they're going to bring
Urza. Oh, good point. Yeah. Bring a power level 4. All right.
Yeah, pre-con. Out of the box. Jacob, Sholo, we'll see you there.
Yeah, make sure that you all go and check out both Voxy and Sholo online. Voxy is constantly streaming. Sholo is clearly on Netflix on Cobra Kai, so you can just support them either which way. But yeah, it was great having both of them on, and they brought such a fun dynamic to the table. I love when guests are just down to play and have fun.
Yeah, they're we've played with Sholo a lot, obviously, and Voxy is just super, super fun. I've been watching her stream for a long time. So Voxy streams in the evenings most days. Sholo, like you said, is on Netflix. We're going to have all their Twitter and Instagram and everything information in the show notes, so make sure you follow them. Sholo and Jacob actually also just launched a new podcast called Lone Lobos, with that link in the show notes as well. But if you just search for Lone Lobos on your podcast apps, it's going to pop up. Those guys are a lot of fun. I'm hoping we can guest on that show here sometime.
Talk about great. Magic. Yeah. And also, Voxy fans, we'd be remiss to say that there is a profanity warning for watching her stream, so make sure no kiddos are around, but she's a ton of fun.
I'm amazed she managed to hold it in for our episode.
Amazing, honestly.
She did a great job.
Quite amazing.
rated PG Voxy is still a ton of fun.
Yeah, rated V for Voxy is what it is. And of course, don't forget to check out the Channel Fireball Marketplace, or go to channelfireball.com/command, the place to get any of the cards that you saw on the show or coming up from any of the new sets, Crimson Vow, as we go into the new year as well. And it's going to be the place for you to get the best prices, best delivery, best shipping, best customer service, and you're going to be able to support local game stores at the same time. So it's a great way to get the cards you need as well as give back to the community that is giving it to you.
Yeah, one thing I love about marketplaces in general and Channel Fireballs is you know, a big one right out of the gate. They got hundreds of vendors. Is just the inventory depth is so great. So if you go to a single vendor, you know, probably won't have all the cards that you're looking for, especially
or
if you're
a
looking
foil
for
version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Channel Fire Marketplace is so big. They've got everything. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's great. And then once you get that stuff, make sure you put it into the Ultra Pro sleeves to protect it. Play it on the Ultra Pro playmat. Use those Mythic Collection deck boxes or the Satin Towers to protect your deck and your cards. We have so much money wrapped up in this game that we want to make sure that we keep all of our game pieces safe so that they retain their value. And Ultra Pro really does. I mean, they're the ones that Jimmy and I use on our own stuff. So we can't give it higher praise than that.
Yep, and of course, don't forget, you can watch Game Nights episodes and Extra Turns episodes a day early if you sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/commandzone. So make sure to do that as well.
Yeah, we appreciate everyone that supports us there. Okay, Everybody, thank you for watching this. As always, we got a ton of content coming up, and we've got some big announcements to make. We got a lot of things going on behind the scenes. I know we've been teasing that for a while, but I think we'll be ready to talk about it fairly soon. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you know when all of our content comes out, so you can be up to date.
Woohoo! All right, thanks everyone for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI. Or download the app today.